Please stand by. Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, Building Business Application Views with Omegamon XE and DE. The teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. This teleconference will use a recent customer application case study as an example of how various Omegamon XE monitoring technologies may be leveraged using Omegamon DE as the integration, coordination, and consolidation tool. The teleconference will be hosted by Ed Woods, Consulting IT Specialist, IBM Tivoli Performance Automation Team. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ed Woods.
Hello, I'm Ed Woods with IBM Corporation, Consulting IT Specialist, Tivoli Software. The topic we're going to be discussing today is building business application views with Omegamon XE and DE. And first of all, I want to thank you all for taking the time to join us. The presentation, I trust you'll find very interesting and informative. So going from our first slide, which is our title slide, there's a copyright slide, and then followed by that is an agenda slide, which will talk about what we're going to be discussing in this session. So we'll start with an overview. We'll talk about the methodology, the process that I typically like to use when I build business application views. And then I'll show some of the mechanics of this process, and we'll actually have a real-world example that I've prototyped with a customer showing the process of how to build a business application view, a step-by-step practicum, if you will. Going to the next slide, which says performance and availability. When we talk about performance and availability, this takes several different forms. First of all, when we say performance, we're talking about several things, potentially the hardware performance, CPU, storage, DASD. As the utilization. We're also talking about subsystem performance utilization. How busy is CICS? How busy is DB2? How busy are the middleware components? How busy is the operating system in general from the perspective of CPU, storage, etc.? Continuing on down to performance, that also includes things such as application performance, online application performance, as well as batch processes. And then finally, response time as well. What is the response time that the user is seeing? That could be the internal response time specific to a given platform component such as ZOS, or that could be the end user response time as measured from the end user desktop. All of these things at some point or another may need to be measured to get a handle on what the true performance of an application is. Going to the next slide, we can then talk about availability. Availability also has several different aspects and considerations. You have the hardware and physical platform availability. Literally, is the physical hardware platform available? Is the box in place? Is it powered on? Is it operational? Is the operating system up, or is the operating system not up? Then you can go down to subsystem availability. If we're talking about ZOS, for example, that could be simply as straightforward as, is CICS up? Is IMS up? As well as DB2 or the MQ systems. So are the key component subsystems, the software subsystems, available on that particular platform? But then availability doesn't necessarily stop there. DB2 could be up, CICS or IMS could be up, but if the network connectivity is not there, not available, and the users are not able to log in, or the other components in the application are not able to connect, say for in this example to the ZOS, then you don't really have true availability. So network availability, network connectivity also comes into play. And being able to measure things like network failures and alerts, etc., can be important. Then the last bullet item relates to the notion of business application availability. The important premise is basically this. When we talk about performance and availability, a lot of times we tend to start out looking at things and measuring things from the aspect or the perspective, if you will, of the platforms, the hardware, the subsystems, and that's always a good beginning point. But ultimately, all of these components are in place to drive business applications. So to get a full and complete understanding of performance and availability management, at some point you may want to consider taking the performance monitoring strategy to the next level, which is actually looking at the business applications and are the applications, the critical business applications available to the users. And this is what then drives us towards the notion of a business view. So going to the next slide, this is where we're going to define a business application view. So here what we're talking about is taking the pieces, the componentry, the measurements that we may start out with when we're talking about managing our physical platforms and our subsystems and our software components and our networks, but then taking the essential components and pieces of information from that monitoring and tying it together and correlating it back to the application, the critical business application. So an application view may target a specific business application, and every business has their mission-critical applications, and then target the monitoring view, the infrastructure, the automation routines, et cetera, around what is required to make sure that that given application is performing and available. You can focus on specific components, specific pieces of subsystems, specific platforms, and then ultimately the idea is to manage performance and availability from the perspective of the application. Going to the next slide, how you can accomplish this is by using a combination of technologies, the Omegamon technology. I use this slide a lot. This is what I call the Omegamon management triangle. Basically, what you have on the top portion of the triangle is what's called Omegamon DE, or Dashboard Edition. The purpose of the dashboard is to provide a high-level monitoring overview capability and to provide the infrastructure, if you will, wherein the various subsystem and platform monitoring components can plug into to provide the multi-tower, multi-system, multi-component view. The bottom portions of the triangle refer to the Omegamon XE monitors that plug in to the dashboard. So you'll have Omegamon XE monitors for ZOS, Kix, DB2. There can also be IBM Tivoli monitoring for distributed systems, etc. All of this plugs into this common dashboard infrastructure and provides us both with real-time performance and availability monitoring, automation, alerting capabilities, as well as historical that can integrate directly into the real-time monitoring views. Going to the next slide, this shows an example of what I'm referring to. This is a typical kind of scenario that we see quite often nowadays. Most applications are complex composite applications that cross many core technologies, pieces, parts, and components. So this is a good example of a dashboard or a Omegamon DE type of a view. You have the graphic overview on the top portion of the screen that shows multiple LPARs of information, the status of key resources. So we're looking at WebSphere, we're looking at MQ, we're looking at ZOS, Kix, DB2, tracking the coupling facility because this particular environment was doing data sharing, as well as then underneath in the bottom portions of the screen having information specific to ZKix, IMS, DB2, and MQ series middleware all aggregated together on a single screen or view. The ability to have these multiple monitoring components aggregated together onto a single screen is the essence of the capability of Omegamon DE, the Dashboard Edition, the ability to combine very key performance information to a single consolidated view. And this example shows this quite elegantly. So now let's go then to the methodology. How can we build a view like this? So now I've gone to a slide that says, literally at the top, the methodology, and underneath, building the application view. These are the typical steps I like to go through if I'm going to help a customer build a business application view. So the first step I always like to do is map the application, get an understanding of the flow of the application. So this may start with an initial chalk talk wherein we discuss what are the components of the application, what is the flow of the application, what pieces talk to what other pieces, what are the operating system components, the transaction manager components, middleware components, database components, network infrastructure components, represent the flow perhaps on a simple chalkboard and then translate that view, if you will, into the monitoring infrastructure, which I'll show you how to do in a few minutes. Once the application is mapped, the next step is to begin to identify the major resources of the application. So again, what are the platforms and processes? What are the address spaces if we're talking ZOS? What are the key processes if we're talking distributed platforms? If we're talking, again, say, for example, Kix or IMS running on Z, then we may want to be able to narrow it down to specific transactions, transcodes, message regions. We may want to narrow it down to specific CICS regions, specific databases if we're talking DB2, or specific threads into DB2 if there's critical plan package names, et cetera, that need to be targeted. Same thing as well when we're talking MQQ managers and channels, et cetera. What are the key infrastructure components that are specific to the given application that we're discussing here? Once we've identified the major resources and we've mapped the application, the next step then is to identify the data sources. In other words, to ensure that for each one of these key points along the way, we have some type of a monitoring data source that can feed our business application view. So that could take the form typically of an Omegamon monitoring agent that will be monitoring whatever that piece or part of the componentry is. Once we've identified our data sources, we can then begin the prototype. Build a prototype using the Dashboard Edition GUI interface, and I'll show you how that's done. And then once the prototype is built, we've mapped and referenced what the application flow looks like. The next step then is to begin to define alerts and then perhaps attach notifications, automated actions, and corrections to that. So this is the typical type of flow I like to follow on in order to build a true business application view using Omegamon DE. Going to the next slide, this shows a slide that says map the application. And this is a typical kind of a graphic that I might begin with initially. The idea, as I said, is to show simply starting out the flow of the application, what talks to what, in what sequence, what are the bidirectional feeds between the different platforms and components, etc. This particular example is actually a real-world scenario that I worked with a customer to build a prototype on how to build a dashboard view. So going from an application server layer, the customer application went through MQ Series on Unix, talked to MQ Series on Kix. Kix in turn then issued transactions into IMS. IMS in turn then talked to DB2. DB2 was in the data sharing mode, so we see multiple DB2s. And this DB2 also talked to DB2 running on Unix as well. So this is a nice example of a composite application that we see quite often nowadays, where in a single interaction, if you will, or flow of work might cross multiple platform boundaries. So the challenge for the customer then was how to get an integrated view that truly represented the status of this one business application so they could quickly isolate and identify problems and address performance and availability issues. So, starting from our graphic view, going to the next slide then, what I like to do is, after I do my chalk talk, I build my graphic, and then I put something in the form of a simple JPEG. I'm a big believer in a picture being worth 1,000 words. And if I have a good picture that represents the flow of the application, that helps quite a bit in terms of people being able to see, understand, and manage the application. So commonly available tools such as PowerPoint, Paint, Visio, whatever, anything that can create a nice JPEG graphic can be used to build this particular graphic. Now, I tend to be somewhat artistically challenged, so maybe my graphics aren't quite as blended as some others that you can create. I'm sure there are many users out there that have very nice artistic capabilities. You can do quite a bit with these software packages, but the one that I built just shows the basic flow, which is what I'm trying to do. Once the JPEG graphic is built that shows the flow, I then put that JPEG in the appropriate user directory in the Tivoli Enterprise Portal server. The Tivoli Enterprise Portal server is the component of the Tivoli monitoring infrastructure wherein all the various GUI displays, etc., are built and defined, and you can see these custom graphics from the portal server. I have some architectural diagrams later in this presentation that will show you the flow of this if you're unclear as to what the infrastructure looks like. So we start with our mapping. We build our graphic. We then, in turn, put the graphic into the portal so we can use that to start building our view. The next step, so we're now on the next slide, which is identify the resources. Well, when we built the graphic, we had boxes that I showed that represented the major resources and platforms and subsystems. So in this scenario, we're looking at Windows, Unix, ZOS, MQ. MQ actually on multiple platforms. Kix, IMS, and DB2 on two different platforms, Z as well as Unix. So we need to have monitoring feeds and capabilities for each one of these various platforms and subsystems to get our complete business application view. If I go to the next slide, this then, in turn, takes us to the next level of detail in terms of what we need to gather to be able to understand the application. So once we identify our platforms and subsystems, the next question we need to ask is, Well, what are the key resources within each one of these things? So if we're talking a Windows box, we might want to just track the CPU and storage on the box, as well as monitor certain key processes that need to be performing or simply need to be available on that box. Same thing as well for Unix. In a ZOS environment, we can monitor things such as key address spaces that make up the application, for example, specific KIX regions, IMS regions, DB2, whatever, as well as tracking things like workload manager service classes so that we can see that the ZOS operating system is meeting its performance goals. WLM information is a good source because WLM is on an ongoing basis, always gathering information that indicates if the operating system is meeting its performance targets. When we're looking at the MQ series, we're looking typically at things like specific MQ queues and channels. Most applications that use MQ middleware will typically have specific channels and queues for specific applications. So if you know the appropriate queues and channels, you can put those directly into your application view and have a very targeted piece just for MQ. For KIX and IMS, similar type of thing. You may have KIX and IMS that might be handling multiple different applications within that set of regions. But within KIX and IMS, you're going to have specific transactions, specific files, specific databases for your application in question. So you typically then in turn want to get down to a little bit more of that level of detail. First of all, find out what KIX region, for example, and then what specific transactions you might want to target from a performance management standpoint. DB2, now we're looking at threads, locks, pools. So from a database perspective, you always want to look at things like lock conflicts, for example. But also you want to monitor things like the threads and connections into DB2. And typically, if you're looking at things from an application perspective, say, for example, using ZOS, I'll show you an example later on of this, is you can filter based on such things as the plan, the package, specific thread-level information that you want to gather and put into your application view. Now, going to our next slide, which talks more about identifying the resources, the premise is basically this. You want to focus on key resources for the application in question. Target those key resources, and you want to try to get it at each point along the application flow. So again, thinking back to the graphic that I showed early on, the premise is simply, I have a flow that I've represented here. I want to have at least some monitoring point for each key hop along the flow, and be able to then have a monitoring point attached to that key step, if you will, so I can get then in turn a unified view of what's happening for the application. The last bullet point refers to really the essence of how we can get this done with the Megamon XE and DE, which is the ability to filter the monitoring information based upon specified criteria. This is part of the prototyping process. So in other words, what happens is we define our overview, we identify our resources, we identify our monitoring points, and then once we've done the analysis to know what transactions, what databases, what regions, what servers, etc., then becomes easy to build the view because using that information as input, you can then build a filtered view for that business application view. Going to the next slide that says identify the data sources. So when we're talking to Megamon, in order to address the platforms and components and subsystems that I've listed, this is what you would use. So for Windows and Unix, you would use the IBM Tivoli Monitoring ITM 6.1. For ZOS, you'd use a Megamon XE for ZOS. For MQ, you'd use a Megamon XE for WBI on ZOS. For IMS, you'd use a Megamon XE for IMS on ZOS. And then for DB2, you would use a Megamon XE for DB2 PE or PM. And then for DB2 running on Unix, you'd have IBM Tivoli Monitoring for distributed databases. Also, I'll mention on the MQ series bullet point, there is also corresponding MQ series monitoring as well, Megamon XE for WBI on other platforms. It's not just a ZOS thing, I hasten to add. So the premise is that once you've identified your subsystems, platforms, just make sure that you have the corresponding Megamon monitor for each one of these components, and then in turn you have the ability then to integrate that information into the business view. Going to the next slide, it says additional data sources. Other information that can be useful includes console logs, can include things like error logs, can include things like application logs coming from Unix levels, etc. So there's a variety of sources above and beyond just what comes from native Omegamon monitoring. When we're talking a ZOS example, the ZOS console messages and console logs are an important source of information because that's where you get information such as the stop starts of address spaces, allocation, deallocation of databases, other kind of critical error type messages that can then in turn be snagged and integrated into the business application view. Another important component as well that can be used quite commonly is what's called the Omegamon Universal Agent. This basically provides the ability to gather information, maybe if there's a scenario where there is not a Tivoli Omegamon monitoring solution available out of the box, you have the ability to fill a given gap using other components such as SNMP data sources, file scanning data sources, socket interfaces, etc. There's a variety of what are called data providers that fit into this infrastructure. The bottom line is using either an IBM Tivoli monitoring solution, an Omegamon solution on the mainframe, or console automation interfaces, or the Omegamon Universal Agent, you can pretty much pull in whatever information you need and get it into this business application view. Going to the next slide that says build the prototype. So now, what we want to do then is build our initial prototype, which looks like what we have on this slide here. So now what we've done is we've actually integrated the graphic view into the Tivoli Enterprise Portal, or the TEP as you often hear it called now. And the graphic view has icons that represent the status of the key monitored resources. And we show the flow of our application on the graphic. And then we can attach things like drill downs and alerts to this once we've built the basic prototype, if you will. On the left-hand portion of the screen, you see the navigation tree, which shows the various resources, KIX, ZOS, MQ, DB2, and then there's pieces that we're monitoring underneath that I've broken out. So under KIX, we're monitoring KIX MQ, KIX region status, KIX response time, for example. And this navigation tree on the left is customizable. The graphics, as I mentioned earlier, are customizable. And I'll step you through the process of how we build this initial prototype. One thing I always hasten to mention is that the process of building a business application view is an iterative process. It's something that you build and grow over time. The beauty of the capabilities of Omegamon XE and DE are that it is something that you can start with something fairly straightforward and then add to it and grow it and add to it and grow it over time. So you don't necessarily have to get it right or get it 100% perfect the first time. You start simple and then grow it from there. So going to our next slide, talks a little bit more about building the prototype. So you have the user-definable hierarchy I mentioned on the left. You use the graphics that we've built to map the application flow. We'll talk about adding links for drill-down detail, and we'll talk about how the icons show up on the screen to show the status of the monitored resources. So basically, the next few slides will address how we built this prototype view that we're looking at here. Going to the next slide, this is where basically what you can do then is if you click on the window area where we have the graphic, this shows the dialog pop-up whereby we can specify the specific graphic, the JPEG, that we put in here. So what's happened is the graphic that I drew, I saved as a JPEG, then I copied it to the Tivoli portal server, and then was able to go into the graphic definition dialog within the portal and select this from the user directory where we copied this. So there's a couple things to point out in this particular dialog. The first is you see where it says the nwecapview.jpg. Basically, that's the name of the graphic file, the JPEG that I used to pull in here. Underneath that, you see an option for style. Basically, this is where you can specify different styles and views. So you can look at different types of icons, shapes of icons, etc. I happen to prefer the icons that show the status that you'll see on quite a few of the examples, which are shapes. So something that's green and round represents a good status. If there's a problem, you'll see the shape change as well as the color. This then helps if you have users who aren't able to see the color changes, but you can see the change of the shape of the icon. To get to this particular view, all you have to do is do a right-click and select Properties, and then you're in the dialog. The next slide shows the user-definable monitoring hierarchy. To get into this particular portion of the editor, what you would do is you see on the left-hand side I have a box that says click to edit navigator view, and it points towards the icon in question. You click on that particular icon, and that would get us into the edit navigator view dialog, which we see in the middle of the screen. What you then have is the navigation view that appears there. So we have our application view with our various pieces underneath it, and then there's icons above the navigation tree that you can click to add additional items to the navigation tree, to add subordinate or child items, to delete items, whatever. So the premise is you add additional components and flesh out the hierarchy by editing this particular view. Then what will happen is this view will be saved, and there will be a little button that you will click on the left portion of the screen, just to the left of where you would click to get into the edit, and that would actually make the changes take effect automatically at that point then. So you use the dialog to build the hierarchy. The premise is then to build the interrelationships, if you will, of the monitored resources. This is how you show what relates to what in terms of the monitoring infrastructure. That's probably the best way to represent it. Going to the next slide, what I like to do is I like to start from a high-level overview and then add drill downs to get more detail, because ultimately there's only so much information you can put on a high-level overview. You can't put everything about everything on a single screen. There's only so much detail that you can fit on a physical screen or a physical view. So the premise is then basically is to provide the essential information on a high-level overview and then provide drill-down capability. So some of the boxes we see in the middle of the screen, you see these little blue things look like a blue chain link, or I call it sometimes a blue paperclip. Those represent what are called link symbols. You can link from information, detail information in the panel, or you can put links on icons, like what I show on the bottom portion there where I show a ZOS performance icon. You see the green shape with the blue thing hovering over it. That indicates the presence of a link. On the right-hand portion of the screen, I show how you get into the link wizard. So again, it's right-click, you select link wizard, and then going to the next screen, this would actually show the link wizard. So the premise of the link wizard then is it gives you the ability to make your own user-definable links. The power of the capability then is you have the ability to link anything really to anything else within the monitoring infrastructure. So you're not limited in terms of specific platforms, LPARs, servers, whatever. If you have something that's connected into the Tivoli monitoring infrastructure, we can link it, we can correlate it, and there's a lot of flexibility in terms of how you define these links and how you relate these things. So you can have hard and fast links, or you can have relative links that actually filter based on specific information that you pass through the link process. So again, the general recommendation, as I mentioned in the bottom portion of the screen, is start with an overview and then provide drill downs for more detail and use the link wizard mechanism to drive this process. So now we're looking at a slide that says build detailed drill downs for analysis. So in this particular example, what we're looking at is a detailed view wherein we've built the more detailed drill down, because as I mentioned before, you want to have the ability to, you know, have a high-level overview, but you can only put so much information on your high-level overview, so you do need your detailed drill-down views to get additional detail. So in this particular thing, we're looking at more specifics in terms of what happens or what can be viewed for given CICS. So we'll look at CICS region information, MQ information, transaction information, as well as graphic icons to show the status of monitored resources. From each one of these things, we could also add additional drill downs if we wanted to. And within the context of the data that appears at the bottom, this is where you would take advantage of the filtering mechanism capabilities of OmegaMon XE and DE to provide detailed content that is specific to the application in question. So the box that mentions filter information for the specific application, that is the key in terms of making this thing effective from an application monitoring perspective. So to see the filter mechanisms at work, let's go to the next slide, which says filter the detail, make the displays application specific. So now what we've done is we've done a right-click, selected properties, and what we're looking at is our editor, if you will, and within the pop-up we see several tabs, one for query, one for filters, one for thresholds, and one for style. This particular pop-up shows the ability of how you can control the view of the data on the screen We'll talk more about queries in a bit, but let's focus on fillers at the moment because this is the essence of how we want to get our specific information. Within the middle of the pop-up, you see things like system ID, Kix region name, Kix version, region status, etc., and then check marks underneath. The check marks, if checked, means that the data, the column of information, otherwise known as the attribute, will appear on the screen. Underneath where the check marks are, you then see lines, and we see, for example, where it says EQ for equal, and then Kix ABC, which is the Kix region name. So this is how we would filter the view to just show a specific Kix region's name. Also, you can do things like put in additional information for lists of CICS regions. You could also do Boolean logic where you could also say for a given Kix region name and a given Kix region status. So if I have everything on the same line, that constitutes an AND. And if I have multiple lines, that constitutes OR logic. So the filtering capabilities are quite powerful within the tool. Going to our next slide now, doing the same premise then for MVS. We want to filter the detail, but now we want to target things such as workload manager service classes. So, for example, I care about workloads that go through the online high service class, so we'll filter the view that makes up the WLM portion of the display based on the service class name. So, again, using the same filtering mechanism. So looking in the middle portion of the screen where we see service class, that's checked, and underneath that we've entered our filter criteria where we're saying show us a service class of online high. Going to our next slide, DB2 example. Again, same premise. Typically when you're looking at these types of applications, there are specific threads, processes, etc. that connect into DB2 to service a specific application. So we want to be able to target and filter based upon that given plan name, package name, etc. So again, same filter mechanism, but now specific to the DB2 component. Continuing on, same deal as well for MQ series. So now we see MQ example, filter the details, target specific queues. Same premise again. We can filter based on the queue manager name. We can filter based on the queue manager name combined with if that queue manager is also talking to a given Kix region. Or filter based on a combination of queue manager, Kix region status, or whatever makes sense in terms of how this particular view needs to be filtered. Going to the next slide, this talks a little bit about the query mechanism and how this drives the whole process. If you saw in the prior slides, that right to the left of filter, we also had a thing that said query. Basically, think of it this way. All the various Omegamon monitors are continuously gathering information and sending it into the central infrastructure that is the Omegamon dashboard monitoring infrastructure. And the process of putting that monitoring information on a display is basically the process of then issuing a query to the monitoring infrastructure and then putting that information on your GUI view. So the query mechanism gives you the ability to either use these standard provided queries that come out of the box with the tool, or you can make adjustments to the queries or make your own user-defined queries. It gives you then very great power in terms of how you can display, manage, sort, filter, and view the performance and monitoring information. And this is a simple example here, but this is a useful one because in this particular scenario, I wanted to be able to show the status of multiple CICS regions from a single screen. So rather than having to go to three different screens to see the status of these Kix regions, I want to be able to see it from a single display. And so within the query results source pop-up, I have the ability to click the button that says let user assign explicitly, which is what I've done here, and then I can select the specific Kix regions, Kix 18, 19, and 20 in this particular example. And so then the net result will be what I'll see on the next slide, which I'll show you in a minute, which you'll see the integrated view. One thing I have highlighted and circled in red on the left portion of this pop-up is all the various queries, if you will, that come out of the box with the tool. So you see that there's Kix queries for NQ analysis, region analysis, service class analysis, task analysis, transaction analysis. And each of the various Omegamon monitors come with these queries defined and ready to go in the tool. So now, if we go to the next slide, we'll see the outcome of what I've defined, which is here, and now I'm seeing a multi-line views, one for each Kix region, an integrated region overview display showing the status of multiple Kix regions from a single screen. So the premise then is query customization gives me the capability to allow for a flexible application display. If my application crosses multiple CICS regions and I have AORs and TORs and FORs, et cetera, I can put those all aggregated onto a single view. I can make modifications, tweaks, copies, et cetera, as needed. And it gives me the ability to see a summarized view across multiple systems. Going to the next slide, this takes the concept of query to the next level. Because again, think in terms of this as a relational engine that lives within inside your monitoring infrastructure. So therefore, you have the ability to do your own user-defined SQL queries. So in this example, I kept it as a fairly simple one. Basically, I just said, do a select asterisk, so show me all the columns of information from a table called DB2 thread exceptions, and this defines my user-defined query. But you can take advantage of this to basically do filtering capabilities, change sort sequences, et cetera, and have a customized view that you can then in turn integrate into your monitoring view. And so it's a very powerful sorting and filtering capability above and beyond what we showed, as well as the view capabilities that we've shown. Going to the next slide, this is where we want to then in turn, now that we've built the prototype and we've put data in there and we've got our monitoring points, we've defined our resources, the next step is to add alerts and notifications. So to add an alert, this is based on a concept of what's called a situation. A situation basically is what makes that icon that you see in the middle of the screen go red. So here under KixMQ series, we have a triangle. That triangle is red to the left of CICS inside the KixMQ series box. And that indicates that an alert has fired. You also see, if you look on the left portion of the screen, under KixMQ status, you see that that has shown a red icon as well. If I go to the next slide, this shows the flyover window that appears. If I position my cursor appropriately, I'll actually see the name of the alert in question, and then I can click on the link inside there to get more detail. Going to the next slide, the question then becomes, well, what type of alerts do I typically need? Well, I like to have three basic types of alerts anytime I build a business application view. I want a performance alert. I want some type of set of availability alerts. I also want response alerts. So basically, there's three corners of the triangle, performance, availability, and response. Now, I want to try to build alerts for each major type. I may not be able to do it for each monitored resource, but for those that I can, if I can have an availability, performance, and a response, those are the areas I want to try to touch. Going to the next slide, bullet point one, build a set of meaningful alerts. Meaningful alerts is critical to the whole process. I want to make the alert names meaningful. I want to make the alerts themselves meaningful. I want them to reflect actual problems in the system. I don't want to have a bunch of noise that becomes more annoying than useful. I want something that's actually targeted and specific to the problem I'm trying to solve. I want to avoid false alerts. A lot of times I suggest a strategy of less is more. Less is more basically means, and I would rather monitor a smaller number of items well than monitor a lot of things but do a bad job with it and end up just getting a lot of noise that gets tuned out by the users. There's expert advice mechanisms that I'll show you to record actions. I always like to, if there's an alert, that the alert has an owner and a consequence, either a manual action or an automatic action that is the result of it. And fundamentally, start basic and make it more complex as you go. Going to the next slide, situations are the basis of all Megamon XE alerts. Any attribute that is monitored by a Megamon may be used in a situation. These alerts, in turn, then, can be used to drive what are called reflex automation scenarios, so that if an alert is detected, you can actually have it go ahead and take an action. A situation is an alert that typically runs in the agent address space. A policy is a more complex form of automation alert mechanism in the sense that you can use this to do multiple commands. You can correlate things using policies. And policies typically run in what's called the management server. And I'll show you in a schematic later on where this stuff resides. Going to the next slide, product-provided situations. There's quite a few situations, or alerts, if you will, that come with each Megamon, and you have the ability to deploy these out of the box and associate these to the application view that we've built. So product-provided situations, we provide quite a few. But you can also then use these as simply a starting point and then customize and tweak them from there as you deem appropriate. Going to the next slide, use situations to monitor critical events. So this just shows a little more detail, if you will, on just some of the product-provided situations. Some of these are started out of the box. Some of these you will have to tweak. I oftentimes recommend using the product provided situations as a template, if you will, and then copy these, make your own, have a naming convention, use meaningful names, and then customize them to the specific requirements you have for your alerts. Going to the next slide, okay, this shows another aspect of the proactive nature of situations. So here we specified a DB2 alert. This is using one of the product provided situations looking at DB2 coupling facility structure use. But you notice that there's several tabs here in the situation editor. You have the condition tab, which specifies what we're monitoring for, the distribution tab, which is where the alert runs, expert advice, and then also the action. So the premise is then you can connect an action to the situation. You can connect an action to the alert. And one of the recommendations I have is I like to have it so that if there is an alert that fires, that there's a consequence. In other words, that there's an action that's going to be taken either manually by whoever's doing the monitoring or automatically by the monitoring tool itself. The next slide, automated actions, shows that action tab. And in that action tab, you can put any kind of a console command into there that you need. So since this is a ZOS example we're looking at here, this would be a console command that would go to the ZOS console. You can specify whether or not to take the action once or take the action multiple times. You can specify whether to take the action where the agent is or where the management server is. The management server is basically the server that all the agents connect to, if you will. The command could be a standard console command, or it could simply be you want to put a message on a console. You're not actually doing a command per se. Whatever comes within that system command line there, you have the ability then to put straight to the ZOS console. You can also, as well, click the button that says Attribute Substitution, and that will put additional monitoring information dynamically into the command as well. So that's where you could punch in variables like user IDs, thread names, plan names, package names. It all depends on whatever the alert in question is. Going to the next slide, this shows the Expert Advice tab. So one of the suggestions I always like to make is if you build alerts that they have some type of expert advice attached to them. The premise then is that if somebody sees the alert, they're going to see a red icon, they're going to see something happen on the screen, and they'll click on that, and then they'll need to know what to do. Now, what to do might be nothing more than calling someone, issuing a command, or maybe there might be some other predefined action they need to take, or simply maybe they don't have to do anything that's being handled automatically by the monitoring infrastructure. But it's always a good recommendation to anytime you build a situation to have some type of expert advice so that the users know how to handle the scenario once it occurs. Going to the next slide, this talks about making alerts meaningful. As I mentioned before, alerts need to be meaningful. Now that takes two things to do. First is you want the alert to have a meaningful name. You don't want to use a crypto technology name. You want something that's fairly straightforward. DB2 lock weight conflict, for example, or given an example of a business application, policy application lock conflict, something like that so that the user can at least see what is going on and they don't necessarily have to be a deep dive expert in the subject matter. The other aspect of making alerts meaningful is being able to combine information in such a way that you filter out unwanted alerts. So in this particular example, we're taking advantage of the Boolean logic aspect of the situation editor. So we're looking for a lock waiter status, we're looking at a lock elapsed time, but we're also looking between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. So in other words, if this were to happen in the evening, we wouldn't care. We only care if this alert happens during prime time. There's things you may care about during the day, but in the evening, it's not as significant, so you want to tune those things out. The next slide shows another aspect of making alerts meaningful. This, again, takes the situation editor logic beyond this. So here we're looking at if the DB2 elapsed time and the package name is disserve, we'll kick off the alert. But it's a different elapsed time and a different package name, well, then that'll kick the alert. And then also we can have a third criteria, which is the line three, which is if we're looking at elapsed time and disserve, but we're also taking into account, in this case, auth ID of CIO, then that drives the alert. The premise then is you can have and or logic within a single alert. I always recommend if you can do this to do it because the more you can do with fewer situations, the more efficient it's going to be, not only from a monitoring standpoint, but also from an ongoing maintenance downstream standpoint. I would rather have a smaller number of situations, there may be a little more sophisticated but are more targeted to my needs, because then I have less to worry about in terms of ongoing keeping these things validated and up to date and up to speed. Going to the next slide, this talks about the policy. So we've looked at situations, which is simple, detect, fire, and forget. Now, policy gives us the ability to do a more correlated analysis. So here we're looking at a set of icons under Policy Editor. So here we're saying, first of all, the first box says, wait until application end user alert is true. So we're checking for a response time alert. Then if that's true, we're going to check to see if there's a problem in kicks. And then if that is true, then we're going to check to see if the DB2 has a lock conflict. So if all three of these are true, we will then take an action. That action could then in turn be a console command. So here we're not looking at just one thing. We're looking at correlating multiple different alerts. And if all of these are true, we'll issue a command. So going to the next slide, performance automation situations versus policies. Policies allow for more sophisticated automation correlation scenarios. Situations are more of a fire and forget kind of thing. Situations run within the individual agent. Policies run within what's called the Tivoli Enterprise Management Server. Next slide. You want to use policies for more sophisticated performance automation scenarios. They're great for things like automated corrections. One nice thing about being able to use the automation that's built into situations and policies is it gives you the ability to do corrective actions at machine speed and not so much rely on manual intervention. Also, policies and situations can be useful for these dynamic tweaks. Basically, you may want to do a tweak automatically to the system. It may not be a permanent fix, but sometimes you want to be able to do a dynamic tweak just to keep the workload going so you don't get a bottleneck or a severe backup, but then also have it alert you so that it has done this and it gives you more time to go and do the analysis to why the problem occurred. Another aspect of alerting, this is the next slide, about policies is also notification. So here's where you can actually do your detections, and you can follow through, and we can have choices, issue other commands, check to see if those commands work, and then in turn also issue commands, issue events to SNMP managers, issue events to tech, for example, and tie all this together using the same policy mechanism. The next slide also mentions something I talked about earlier on, which is pulling in console information and alerts and messages into the monitoring infrastructure. If I can pull in console events, console messages, like, for example, a KIX ABEN message here, then we can incorporate these types of problem alerts, et cetera, into our application view. And these types of things can be quite useful from an availability monitoring standpoint. Next slide, then, talking more about recommendations on alerts and notifications. So as much as possible, alerts should have a display option, expert advice, and an owner, someone to notify. Don't always assume that someone's looking at the screen. And alerts can take many different forms, SNMP traps, alerts sent to Tivoli, messages, emails, whatever makes sense, as well as what appears on the screen. The next topic talks about history. So a lot of what we've looked at is real-time. Real-time monitoring, real-time performance management, but history is an important part of this. The Omegamon XE-DE infrastructure provides you with the ability to integrate history directly within the real time. That's history of the performance data, but also history of alerts, etc. Going to the next slide, this shows our topography view, our architectural view, if you will. So here we see we have our monitoring that runs on the mainframe, and so we're looking at an Omegamon collector monitoring in the example on ZOS, DB2, and then you have the XE agent address space, COA address space, 3270 that you can log on to, as well as you see the XE agent also sends its data through something, a black box called the TEMS, Tivoli Enterprise Management Server. You also see distributed monitoring as well that can send its data to the TEMS, and then there's also an interface to what's called a history data warehouse, which is on the right in red. So history can be gathered at several points in the red ovals. History can also then in turn be integrated and shown directly through the portal. The portal server is either a Windows or a Linux box, and that's where the GUI is. And so things like the graphic that I built early on, that gets copied to that portal server that I mentioned earlier in the presentation. Going to the next slide, you can interactively query the historical data, and you can specify custom time spans, last hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, 6 hours, etc. And then the next slide shows the history data integrated within the real-time view. So here we're looking at lock, wait, time interval records captured over one-hour times, and the time intervals are user-definable in terms of how the data is captured. So next slide mentions the importance of history and application monitoring. Real-time is important. The alerting is important. It's also good to have history as well because that gives us the ability to do trending and analysis over time to see if there really is a problem. How often am I having a problem? Is this an isolated problem or is this an ongoing problem? Is this something that happens once in a while or once every day? So, final slide. In conclusion, the business view is an integration of tools. The Omegamon XE dashboard type of capability gives the ability to build the big picture view with the drill downs. It's history as well as real time. It's automation, it's notification, it's alerting, problem isolation, gives the ability to see things from a big picture, multi-system, multi-platform, Plex level, distributed as well as mainframe type of views. So with that, I thank you and I'll open it up for questions.
Thank you, Ed. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Your feedback is important to us and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Question 2, what was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3, and we'll pause for just a moment. Question 3, do you have a systems management dashboard on ZOS with customizable application views? If no, press star 1. If yes, with IBM Omegamon, press star 2. If yes, with non-IBM tool, press star 3. Question 4, when considering systems management dashboard, which one of the following areas is of greatest interest to you? If real-time monitoring and taking corrective actions, press star 1. If historical trending and problem analysis, press star 2. If automation capabilities, press star 3. If all of the above, press star 4. And we'll pause for just a moment. And our final question today, are you interested in receiving additional information regarding the product discussed today? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that does conclude our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ed while we wait for questions.
Well, great. Well, I want to thank everyone for attending today. I hope you found the session informative, and I'll be happy to tackle any questions you may have at this time.
We'll go first to John Cook.
Hi. I had two questions, actually. First question is regarding historical data.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, when we implemented historical data collection, we had the data collected at the agent level,
mm-hmm.
and then we migrated that up, and we had a fairly elaborate process of situations set up to monitor file sizes, historical file sizes growing at the agent level.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had some situations that would delete the files when they got too big and things like that. Several months ago, we switched over from that to storing historical data at the remote CMS level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've found that we don't need to monitor the remote CMSs that they are, in fact, truncating the files themselves as they move up to the data warehouse.
Right.
And I just wanted to verify that that is true, and that is different from storing historical data at the agent level, that when it's stored at the remote CMS level and it migrates up to the data warehouse, it automatically truncates the historical files on the CMS.
Now, the agents were at what platform?
Well, they were Unix and Windows, basically.
Okay. And then the remote was running on what platform?
Windows.
Okay.
I mean, we haven't done any truncating of the remote CMSs, so we're assuming that they are just truncating themselves, because otherwise they would be very huge files by now.
Yeah, without reviewing the specifications, you can set it up that way, and obviously what you're seeing is what's occurring. One thing I'll mention, since we're talking Unix, Windows, distributed platforms, is the new ITM6 has additional history data warehouse capabilities, which also would include some built-in management, cleanup, truncation, and things like that. It's much more flexible. I'll hasten to add as well, as I was flipping through the slide, I realized I had an oops, an old version of a slide in there, because it mentioned that the history data warehouse has to be SQL Server. That's not true anymore. We now support UDB and other databases as well as that. So with that being said, you know, if you want to have the optimal in terms of being able to manage the history data, probably the best way to do it is to broker it from the management server over to the data warehouse, and then let the built-in capabilities of the Tivoli data warehouse history manage that for you. Then you won't have to worry about any of this in the future, and you'll be able to have, you know, weeks and months worth of data.
Okay. Second question real quick was regarding the JPEG graphics and the graphics displays. We have a few customer screens we have set up like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really been able to get those to work really well. They're a bit unwieldy in that the little icons you place in the graphic never really stay where they're supposed to, or the scaling is always off
mm-hmm.
from the way you set it. I haven't been able to find anything that I'm doing wrong from the instructions. I'm just wondering if that's a common thing, or if that's something that's going to be taken care of in the new release.
Typically, you find with each release how it handles scaling and stuff like that gets better and better. Usually what I do when I set the stuff up, though, is I try to fit the graphic within the acreage of the window that I'm going to be working with in terms of whoever's going to be looking at it. And I usually don't use options like the automatic fit to view and things like that, because I find that sometimes those can be confusing when you go to different monitor sizes. It'll kind of expand, contract, or whatever, and that can cause an annoyance. So I prefer to turn off some of those fit to view options and basically try to design the graphic and crop it so that it'll fit directly within the window I'm placing it in without having to do a lot of scrolling and sizing. And that way then, once you place it in there and you place the icons, they really shouldn't move around or whatever. It should stay pretty much where you need it.
Okay, thank you. We'll try that.
Yeah, I mean, it's perhaps a different way of going at it, but it's kind of a path of least resistance, because the fit-to-view option, I find sometimes it maybe makes it a little bit too small, depending on the monitor you're looking at, so it's harder to see the icons. And I have seen scenarios where it does, you know, may move them around a little bit, in which case then it just becomes harder, because then you have to click to max it up again. It's easier if you can just crop the graphic to fit the size of what you're working with.
Great. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, it's *1 on your telephone. And we'll go next to Bill Staziri.
Hi. My question, kind of general, I was wondering if you could say anything about system resource utilization of the various XE components, specifically CPU, virtual storage, I/O rates, that kind of thing. As an example, are there certain kind of alerts that use more system resources? How can we monitor the system resources used by XE, or or would you have recommendations like these types of alerts use more resources or don't use more than X number of alerts or something like that?
What types of platforms are we talking here?
Specifically ZOS.
ZOS, okay. Although a lot of this would probably hold true as well for Unix, Windows, et cetera, but holding specific to Z. There are several things that could potentially impact the resource utilization of the monitoring infrastructure. First and foremost is the initial configuration, quantity of data that's gathered, et cetera. Without getting into all the various specifics of all the different monitors, things like, say, for example, I only want to monitor DESD using maybe a Megamon MVS and not monitor it using the Kix piece and all the other pieces as well. So, in other words, avoid redundant monitoring. If you're enabling things like the DB2 monitoring, there's options that can drive how much, say, for example, object analysis data you gather and how much you correlate. And these can all have impact, but, you know, that's a whole different presentation, really. I'd say just looking at specific to the question you had on the table, which is situations, alerts, et cetera, I think of it this way. A situation is, in essence, a little piece of code that's checking on a periodic basis, and it's going out and checking for information and checking the status. So, therefore, by definition, if I have more situations and I have them running on a tighter interval, you do have the potential for the monitoring to use more resource. Now, how significant that's going to be, it very much depends on what tables, what information, how many instances. For example, if you're monitoring, you know, 500 threads versus one MVS region or whatever. I mean, there's so many variables, it's hard to give you a precise number. One recommendation I do usually make is I prefer a less is more approach, in the sense that if I could have a smaller number of situations but use the Boolean logic capabilities to make them a little more intelligent and sophisticated, that saves me both the overhead of running multiple situations as well as having to maintain them. And another aspect of this as well is when you're talking situations, let's keep it to a simple example. I have situations that are checking DB2 threads. I want to try to keep those situations being checked on a comparable interval. So in other words, as a standard, try to have them all checking on like a 2-minute, 3-minute interval, whatever it is. The premise is then is that there's internal performance mechanisms called one of them called Duper. Basically, what it will do is we'll take any set of situations that are going against the same hunk of information and synchronize the check so that basically the scan of the data only needs to happen once as opposed to multiple times. If you're doing a lot of situations, these economies of scale can add up. So, you know, synchronizing the intervals when you're going at common types of data. Don't make the situation intervals too narrow for too many different things. Try to take advantage of Boolean logic as opposed to having gazillions of different situations. Those are usually the best ways to go.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And once again, it is star one, please. We'll now move on to David Hughes.
Yes, I was wondering if you have any product-provided situations for SAP R3?
I'm not familiar with that product anymore.
Okay, well, I was just wondering if you had anything that drilled down into the R3 systems. I guess we can cut and paste things like DB2 things like that. We can put that in ourselves. But
once upon a time, this is back when I worked for Candle, we had an SAP monitoring capability. But I'm not sure where that stands right now. That's not a component I've worked with in quite a while. At the time at which we had that capability, and this is something that installed in the SAP basis code, we had situations in the whole deal. But I'm not sure where that stands now. I would have to find out more. If you wanted to email me or something, I could check into it.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll now move on to you, Joe Burchai.
Like most of the shop that we have CISS regions, some are running 7x24, some just running in a certain window in a certain day. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, under the CISS Flex, the situation that Omega comes with it, is there a situation that you can monitor the down system that is in the right window that is down, that you can monitor the regions down?
Sure. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a presentation on Thursday, and one of the things I'll show is an example of how you can build alerts built around what we call the heartbeat. Think of it this way. Every Kix region in a Megamon terminology is a managed system. Each managed system is going to get a heartbeat check from the agent to the rest of the monitoring infrastructure. If the region goes away, or say, for example, the agent goes down, one or the other, let's say the region goes down, that heartbeat goes away. You'll be able to build a situation that checks for the heartbeat, and if it goes to an offline status, you can pop an alert off of that. So what you would do is create a situation that basically looks for the heartbeat. You put in the time window that you're concerned about, and if that combination of information is true, then you have an alert.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Mr. Woods, there are no further questions at this time.
Okay. Well, once again, I want to thank everyone for attending. The questions were very interesting as well, and I hope you all have a very good day. Thank you.
That does conclude our conference, everyone. We thank you for your participation. Have a great day.